Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous panel discussion entitled Huddle Up, Intimacy, Sexuality, and Relationships. My name is Honey and I'm a compulsive overeater and your leader for today's panel. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Please take a moment now to turn off all cell phones or other electronic beeping devices. Our OA preamble states, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and recover from compulsive overeating. The only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions. OA is not affiliated with any religious sect or denomination, political organization, or institution. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and to carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. I have stated that I'm a compulsive overeater. Are there any other compulsive overeaters present? Good to know. Our four panelists will share their experience, strength, and hope on today's topic for approximately 10 minutes each. After that, we will take questions. There are pencils and papers and an ask-it basket on each table. Please write your question on a sheet of paper, fold it, and put it in the ask-it basket. Please specify if the question is to a particular panelist or to just anybody. Our first speaker is Christine.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? Oh, no. Okay. Hi. I'm Christine. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater, restrictor, caffeine addict.
Hi.
Hi, and I am nervous, but I'm really also inspired because I'm getting to look out at all of you, and I deeply respect, all of you, but there are people whose recovery in the rooms have really carried me during my 4 years in program, so it's really an honor and a privilege. Thank you, Johanna, for asking me to share with you. Okay, guys, let's get honest. Let's get honest. That's what I'm here to do today. I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now with sexuality and intimacy in my life. In a microphone. Just want to point that out. Okay. Yeah. Let me get some of the numbers out of the way because I know some of you, but I don't know most of you. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 4 years. Goddess willing, I will have 4 years of abstinence March 29th. And just because I know I'm curious about other people's abstinences, I'll just define mine for you quickly. I don't weigh myself. I abstain from caffeine, and I abstain from individual alcoholic foods that are personal to me. And then I have a food plan, which is separate from that. And I do that imperfectly with God's help, Goddess's help. Okay, so, right. You know, okay, here's what it was like, you guys. I come from a family of distinguished addicts and alcoholics and compulsive overeaters. I come from a long lineage of folks. And it turns out growing up in chaos was a really useful environment to learn certain beliefs about sexuality and intimacy from a very, very early age. I believe I was born a compulsive overeater. I always had a really unnatural, I heard our lunchtime speaker talk about this, an unnatural interest in food, not just interest, obsession. Like, that was what I lived for. My parents divorced when I was one, and I swear the only way I got through visits with my dad was because, like, he took us out to eat. It was like, yeah, how much, like, food can I pile onto this little plate so I can get through the discomfort of divorce, right, of all the challenges I had in my family. So what I learned growing up in that environment as the sweet little compulsive overeater that I was that you can't really trust people. That was a really big belief that I learned early on that turns out isn't true, but it's something that's really guided my intimacy and my relationships since that time. And what happened, you guys, is growing up with so much chaos and so much that was outside of my control, I learned there are two ways that I can show up in relationships that work for me. I can hold on tight to you, right? I can binge on you, right? If I'm with you and you feel good, I want more of you. Right, because I just want to feel good. I'm an addict. I don't want to feel pain. And so I know how to hold on tight. Because my fear, what I learned growing up, is people leave, or they're going to eventually disappoint you, or they're going to hurt you and let you down. So I know how to do that, and I know how to run away. I'm really good at that, too. And you guys, here's the tricky thing. As an addict, I can be right in front of you and not be with you, right? You guys know what that's like. And using substances is a really useful way to be physically present with someone without being emotionally present, without actually being there. And I want to just say that that's a really important survival the tool that I needed growing up. I think as compulsive overeaters, what I hear sometimes us doing is being really hard on ourselves. And for me, it's important as someone recovering in this program, as a fellow of yours, to have compassion for myself and other people. That I used food and caffeine and exercise for a long time because it worked, because I didn't have other tools. So, sexuality and intimacy. What happened? Well, I grew up and I got a couple more tools under my belt. Fantasy thinking and black and white thinking. Those came in really useful when I started being sexual and intimate. So, I lost my virginity when I was 18, but I had boyfriends when I was straight. I was straight for 18 years, came out as a lesbian when I was 18, and then have been a lesbian-ish for 9 years. Get to that, but 9 years. So fantasy thinking was something else that I really had as a compulsive overeater, which was that when I started dating someone, I mean like hand-holding, seventh grade, like, I don't want your tongue in my mouth dating. I thought that was the boy I was going to marry. I mean, I came up with these really extensive life plans that included the exact minute I would have my first kiss by my back door at 7:48 p.m., right on July 7th. I mean, I'm not kidding. And then I wrote down the names of my future children, when I would have them, and how my husband was going to die. That's a little creepy. But like, I was going to have this weird lover in the retirement home. I had it all figured out, you guys. So, but like, right, I'm a compulsive overeater. I had to plan and figure everything out. I had to be perfect. Life had to be perfect because it felt unmanageable, because my feelings were unmanageable. My anxiety, letting someone in, being vulnerable, even just to hold my hand, was too scary. So the only way I could let you in was if you were never going to leave. If you were never going to leave me. So that's fantasy thinking. That's what that's called. So it turns out I didn't marry Andy Anderson, because I'm queer. So that didn't happen. But, and the black and white thinking, you guys, the black and white thinking, was another way of really keeping myself safe. And what I mean by that when it comes to intimacy is, like, I want to purge all my stuff on you as soon as I meet you, because that's my way of testing you out, right? So, like, I don't do so well with, like, the casual reveal or, like, the slow, like, let me just tell you my favorite color and the kind of music I like. Like, I would much rather be like, do you know the kind of environment I grew up in? I'm a compulsive overeater. This is how much I weigh. Like, do you still love me? Are you going to stick around? You want to see my, you know, weird birthmark? It's like, I don't do so well with taking time to gradually let somebody in and to gradually learn to trust that other person, right? I binge, I restrict. Those are my two ways of being. So I just get to be in awareness about that. Something else, and so that's what it was like, right? Something else I want to share that happened, which really preceded me coming into program, is I was raped my senior year of college. I was sexually assaulted by a classmate of mine who I knew, who I trusted, who I respected. And that's a really, really important part of my story. And I want to share that with all of you today, because what I know about these rooms is there are so many survivors who come here. Survivors of childhood sexual abuse, of sexual violence, of dating violence, domestic violence, people who may currently be in that kind of situation. And I think it has everything to do with the way I respond to food in my body. I know some people, even in this room, have been told that sexual assault is an outside issue, and I feel really, really strongly, you guys, that anything that you've personally experienced is an inside issue. It's not an outside issue. It belongs in these rooms because it's a part of my lived experience. I'm not going to tell you what political party I'm affiliated with, you can probably guess, but that's an outside issue. But the fact that I was violated and taken advantage of by someone I trusted very much is part of my disease, and it's part of my healing, to be honest about that. So I just want to put that out there for survivors. My hope is that the rooms can be a safe place for you, and I take that on as a responsibility that you feel safe. Thank you. Wow, there's a lot I want to get to. Okay, what I want to say about the sexual assault, you guys, is that I never had restricted really in my life prior to that. A couple diets when I was in seventh grade where it was cool to eat like fruit cups and like fat-free tuna, but that didn't last long. I'm a compulsive overeater, right? Like, I want food. But the restricted started after I was raped because it was a way of trying to feel I had some control and some safety, to literally build up the muscle mass in my body so I could defend myself, right? It was a sane reaction to an insane thing that happened to me. The problem is I do things to the extremes, right? So like following the food pyramid is a nice idea, except that that was my whole life. My whole life became about getting my body to look a certain way and my food, and my hope was that I could begin to feel a certain way if the food is under control, and it didn't work. So I have tremendous respect for restrictors, bulimics, anorexics. That brought me to my knees within 9 months. I compulsively overeaten for like 18 years before, 22 years before I came into the program. So really quick, short amount of time, my life became incredibly unmanageable, and that's when I came into these rooms. And I'd love to share some recovery. Maybe that would be good. The recovery is that I can use these steps to guide me in my intimate sexual relationships today, you guys. And that starts for me with step one, with being powerless. It's really, really hard for me to admit that I'm powerless over other people, because it turns out relationships and intimacy involve other people. Shit. Right? It's not just me. Like, right when it's just me and the food on the plate, like, it can be me and God and the food, and, like, there's one human being in that interaction. When it comes to relationships and intimacy, there are other people, and that's where life gets a little trickier and a little bit grayer. So what does it look like today? I'll really just quickly let you know that I've started dating. Holy shit! How the hell do you do that, guys? Like, I have no clue. I've been in committed, serious relationships most of my adult life. Those felt safe for me. Those felt comfortable for me. So to be out there dating, it turns out, boys and girls, I don't know what's happening, but I'm open to it, it's just a real new opportunity of powerlessness, and to get to surrender and to say that I don't know what I'm doing. And, like, how beautiful that step two follows step one, which is that there's a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. Thank you. Because Lord knows I need it. I need a power greater than myself. I want to share that relationships and intimacy for me today are ways of getting closer to myself, to God, and to other human beings. That's the whole reason we have relationships and intimacy, is for a deeper connection. And it turns out that all the stuff that gets triggered for me in relationships are really just opportunities to get closer, to do the footwork. I've done tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of writing these past few months, you guys, because I've been so uncomfortable. I'm needing God. I'm relying on God, Goddess, higher power, now in my life in a way that I never have had to before. And it's because of these relationship and intimacy issues. The very, very last thing I'll say, just to get on my soapbox for a second, to come back to the sexual assault issue, is I know, I think time's up. Yeah, does that mean I have a minute when time's up? Is that what you said? No. One more. Okay, yeah, that's what that means. One more minute. Is that I also just want to put out there, you guys, the 12 steps weren't created for sexual assault survivors. They were created for addicts. And so I want to put out there, if there are sponsors in the room or people who are inventorying a sexual assault in a fourth step, I think it's really, really important for that last column of your part to be blank. I just need to say that on a group level, that for me it was really, really important when I was victimized that I had no part. I still got to explore the feelings that came up. I still got to explore what was going on. I still got to turn it over. But it's really, really, really important that we be clear that an assault is not an addiction. It's not a compulsive behavior. It's someone who committed a crime against me. And my only part was that I showed up, right? I showed up, and someone chose to victimize me. So for today and healing, every day gets better and stronger. Some days are harder than others. I'm so grateful for this program and for the gift of abstinence, because without that, you guys, there's no way I could have sexuality, intimacy, connections with myself and others, because I'd be checked out. And I don't have to use food today. I get to use this loving program and a higher power, and I get to ask for help when I need it, which I do all the time. Thanks so much for letting me share. Can't wait for you.
Thank you, Christine. Our next speaker is Norman.
Hi, my name is Norman, compulsive overeater. And for me, this is a dream come true, and thank you, Joanna, for asking me to speak. I've been in the program about 7 years, and abstinence about 6 years. We got to wheel next month. And I'm very excited that that I can be pure something good. And I really want to say that thanks to the program, I accepted who I was as a person. The day after the first meeting of OA, I came out to my parents, and I came out to a lot of people at the same time, because I needed to, the weight that I had was eating me inside. Well, that was the one thing that I needed to communicate to people that I love, especially to my parents. So once I told them that I was gay, I realized that that was the beginning of a new journey for me. And thank God every day that the program was there for me to support me and to find people that that can be there, you know, through this new life. Because I always thought that it was going to be an easy journey, and it wasn't. It hasn't been. But I'm happy that I'm here now after 7 years. And you know, when they told me about the topic of today, I was thinking, well, what am I going to talk about? Because I don't have a partner. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have a husband. I'm trying to find people to date. It's not an easy thing, like Christine was saying. But it's something that you have to work on a daily basis, and at the same time not be so compulsive about it, because there's other aspects of my life that I need to worry about, like calling my sponsor, writing my thoughts, following the steps, being honest to myself and to other people. And I have to incorporate the other part of myself too, you know, going out and meeting people. I go through stages where I'm like really boy crazy, I have to admit. And that's something that's part of me, and I'm not ashamed to say it, because that's who I am. There's times where this afternoon before I got here, I went to the mall with my niece. She's 17 and I'm 37, and we're talking about boys, you know, because that's our common ground, you know. And I like it. I always tell her, you know, I could be your uncle and I could be your aunt too, you know, at the same time, you know. So that's being comfortable with who I am, but I have to go to therapy, I have to go and meet other people that are like me. And being gay is not the only thing that is in my life, there's other aspects of my life. You know, I'm very nervous right now, so just bear with me. So in this new life, you know, I've been 7 years, I've been here 7 years, and I have lost a lot of weight, but most of it has been learning about myself, learning who I am, and learning about the person that I want to be from this point on. And on a daily basis, I do make mistakes, but the one thing that I really respect and I really take care and protect is my abstinence. That's why I call my sponsor. That's why I know that whenever I'm going to go somewhere or whatever feelings come up, or if I feel like rejection, because rejection is something that's very strong. It's a strong feeling that we all experience at some point or another. And if you haven't experienced it, yeah, you will experience it, because it does happen. But I don't have to go and overeat about it. I don't have to, if I go out and someone says, no, I'm not interested in you, that doesn't mean that I have to go and pig out on my way home, because that's the way I used to solve my problems. But that's not the case anymore. Now I have tools. I can call people and I can tell them, this is how I feel. I feel very shit right now, but you know what? Tomorrow I can get up and face the world and then keep going, no matter what. So that's something that I do protect. After being here for 1 year, I broke my abstinence because I got really confident. I went out of town and I was thinking, well, if you think Mexico doesn't really count. But when I came back here, we were like, you know what? No, I want to start all over. And it was my decision. My sponsor didn't tell me, you have to do this. I decided that because it was coming up all the time. And I realized, you know what? I have to do this for myself. And there's no shame or guilt about it. And even after 6 years, almost 6 years of abstinence, I know that it can go away at any minute. I know that I can lose it quickly. But that's why I'm very careful about where I go, what I do, and what I eat. And sometimes it's very challenging. I go clubbing a lot. I like clubbing. But whenever I get out of a club with my friends, they want to go eat. And that's one challenge that I always have to face. But I realize, and I force them to go have breakfast with me at 5 in the morning. And they want to have tacos or whatever they want to have. But I have to do what's right for me. I don't have to please anybody. I don't have to please... Even if I'm on a date, I don't have to pick the other guy, you know, because I'm going to deal with the issue, not him. So I do have to go to any length, like I told my sponsor, the first sponsor that I had, because she asked me, when I asked her if she could be my sponsor, she said, so what do you want to do in here? What do you think you're going to do? And I told her, I want to go to any length to protect my abstinence, to respect it and to respect people, because before the program, I didn't want it. I mean, I always respect people, but behind their back, I would say all kinds of stuff about them. I was really good at it, you know, and I realized that one of my main problems was that I wasn't true to myself. I wasn't true to the person that I was, you know. And it was very hard for me to understand that I had to evolve as a human being. So I brought something that I carry with, that I have with me at home all the time. And whenever I open this drawer where I have belts, I always look at it and it reminds me that I need to be very, if I'm not careful with my decisions eating-wise, I could go back and use this again. So this is a belt that I used to wear. And it has holes getting close to the end. Because it got almost to the end. It got at the very end, and then that's when I realized that I couldn't live that life anymore. I had to make changes. So thank God I found the program, and I'm here. And, you know, like I said, when I was asked to speak, I was like, okay, what am I going to say about relationships and sex and all that? I do love sex. You know, I think that it's something that there's nothing wrong with saying it. You know, that's part of who I am. But it's not the main thing in my life. But 2 weeks ago, I went to a club, and to a concert. And, you know, nowadays, I go wherever I need to go. If nobody wants to come with me or I don't want to go with someone, I just go by myself. Because I feel that confident that I'm going to go and I'm going to have fun. So that's what I do. So 2 weeks ago, I went to a concert and somebody was flirting with me. I wasn't even expecting it. And this person just came to me and after some kind of flirtation smiles, he came and kissed me. And, you know, that was good. I enjoyed that. Because I wasn't expecting it. And I was like, wow, God is good, you know. And I'm like, I have to come more often by myself. So, and then this week, you know, I had the opportunity to be with someone, intimate with someone. I wasn't looking for that situation, but he came up to me, and I was like, you know, why hold back? Just do it, you know? I did call a few people from program, and I checked with people, because I was like, what should I do? You know, if I never... And you know, the one thing I realized is that, you know, there's other people that even though I'm still chunky or fat or whatever, there's people that want to be with me sexually, you know? And that's something that before the program, I thought it couldn't happen to me. I always thought, you know what? No, you're too fat. You know, nobody wants to be with you in that way. And with the latest event, I realized that, you know, it comes when it comes, you know? And I am looking for a relationship, something that's meaningful. Something that I can treasure for a long, long time. And I do plan to get married. I do want to have a husband. I do want to have a big wedding like, you know, like everybody does, because I feel that that's my dream. That's my hope. But in the meantime, I do have to interact with other people in the world. And I travel from time to time. And I go to church. And I also study psychology now. And everything is helping me to realize that, you know what, the past is the past, and the present is the present. And for now, I do come to the meetings, I do call my sponsor, I do follow the steps, you know, and bottom line is that no matter what, I don't have control over people, places, and things, you know, not even on myself. But I do make good decisions on a daily basis most of the time. Because there's always some times where I mess up, but most of the time I do it because God cares about me and because there's people that have listened to me in this room, people that I really care and that I treasure and that are there in my heart. And if it wasn't for the program, I would have never met these people. So from this point on, I wish I would have come to this program when I was 18 or 19 so that I would have, you know, avoided all the things that I did in the past. But I can look at the past. I can't change it anymore. But from now on, I do plan to have a good time, and and I'm sure that everything more will be revealed as time goes by. And I'm very proud of who I am now. Thank you.
Thank you, Norman. Our next speaker is Joe.
Hi, I'm Joe. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic, and thank you so much, Johanna, for asking me to speak. I've been in the program 24 years. I have 16 years, 2 months, and so many days of abstinence, and it's not perfect, and I let people know that. I have a year or a year and a half, and then I'd be in a relationship and it would break up, and then I would go back to the food. And what has helped me is that first step, because then I don't have the dilemma or mind mess. My family, I didn't grow up, I believe my grandmother was a compulsive overeater and prescription addict. I believe that I always was passionate about food. I say when I speak that in kindergarten we made butter, this tells you how old I am, we were churning it. And I couldn't take a nap. And we were going to have crackers and this butter, and I couldn't nap. And my teacher, I remember, was so frustrated with me because everyone else could lay down and go to sleep. But I was so excited to eat what we were going to make that I couldn't sleep at 5. So my mother found me in a closet eating a mothball. I mean, you don't want to have relationships like that. I came from a family where my parents really loved each other. They had fun. They really loved each other. But my father was a rageaholic, and I was the one who pulled the pin. So my relationship really came from a place that wasn't healthy. I didn't know how to have a good relationship because the one with my father was so negative. I even forgot that I had been taken advantage of physically by some professionals. I had a relationship where I did have sexual abuse. And, you know, what happened with this program was not only keeping 50 pounds off, but was learning how to live life on life's terms and have relationships that were not like the relationships that I had growing up. My parents would always say, don't try too hard. You don't have to try so hard. But I didn't know what that meant. But I was a people pleaser like nobody else. And if you were in a relationship with me, oh boy, were you going to get treated well. So well that I'll drive you away. You know, I just didn't know how to stop because I thought if I kept giving and kept doing, I'd be the most wonderful girlfriend you'd ever have. And it didn't work out that way. And I have another program too, and I have learned that, in fact, my first intimate relationship was with a woman, and it wasn't about sex. Intimacy and sex are different to me. I think when you have a sexual relationship, you want intimacy. But intimacy with this female was about trusting, was about being able to be who I am, say how I feel, and not worry that that person is going to run away. And this person and I were friends for a couple of years, and now we're still friends, but not socially. We don't do really anything together. But I am so grateful for that relationship because it taught me how to be intimate. It taught me how to care about somebody else, but also how to be me and not worry that if once they get to know me, they're going to run away. That was always my fear. You're going to get to know me and run away. And I didn't even know who I was. I think it's still a learning in process. I mean, I was able on Friday when I was asked out on a date to say no and do it a different day because I was too tired. And then when I was feeling better, thinking, well, maybe I could. I mean, that I could say no. I am 49 and single. And I'm going to be 50 on March 7th. Oh, my God, I heard in the audience. I heard, oh, my God, in the audience. You know, I couldn't be in a relationship before now and have it healthy. That's just how it worked out for me. And, you know, my sponsor had said a long time ago, what if you're going to be alone? You know, I have to love myself, and I'm a hell of a lot of fun. And, you know, even my dad said to me once, you are the most, and he knows a lot of people, and he said, you are the most fun of anybody I have ever met when I'm behaving appropriately in his eyes. I'm able to have an intimate relationship with my father, and that used to scare the shit out of me. And again, it doesn't mean sex. It means that I can be close to him and not afraid of him. That I, in sex, don't have to be the one that's doing everything to please the person so that I'm the most amazing person they've ever had sex with. I have thought about women, haven't tried it. My mother told me when I was younger, I said, what if I'm a lesbian? And she said, I think I will have failed as a mother. She's dead now, so there's not anything really holding it, but still, it's over me. But there's a part of a man that I just can't imagine being without. Cheers to that, right? It's also a part I'm glad I don't have myself. You know, being a woman is amazing. It's amazing to be a woman. And that I can have a man treat me like a woman, deservingly so. You know, we've gotten to this place, and we've had to work hard to get here. Living is not easy. OA is simple, but not O easy. Not easy. When I was heavier, I gained 7 pounds this year. I have a muffin top. And I have to rub my belly. I mean, I've had a lot of health issues. I have to rub my belly and say, well, thank God I have a belly. Or rub my thighs and say, thank God my thighs are working. I just have to go and exercise, and I don't want to do it. But that's up to me. I need to take care of myself. I want to date someone who takes care of themselves. Why wouldn't I take care of myself? Instead of looking so much for somebody else, I just need to love myself. And if I want to be out there more, then I have to go out and do those activities. And the relationships that I have now are healthy. I would never have thought I would be thin. I would never have thought I'd be single at 49. I would never have thought that that would be okay. And there are days it doesn't feel okay. And I know that I'd like to be in a relationship, but I can be in a relationship now. And I couldn't before. I dated a lot, and I had a career that took me so that it was really hard, and years passed. And, you know, the whole child thing, if I want a child, I can adopt. There's options. I have so many options. And when next time I have sex, because it's been a little while, I'm not going to do all the work. I'm going to be taken care of. And I'm also going to be able to give. And I think in this program, God allows us to have give and take. And he's there for us all the time, our higher power, the ocean, whatever it is. And we are all special. And we all deserve to be loved, but we have to love ourselves first. And that just comes by saying I love you, not overeating, and just showing up. So thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Our next speaker is Hank.
Hi, family. My name is Hank, and I am a compulsive eater. And this is a distinct privilege to be here with these three amazing people, all of whom are young enough to be my children. So I know what words mean. I was an editor, but I went to the dictionary.com outside interest and looked up the words just so I could, I just wanted to know what I was talking about, which is, you know, part of the growth that I've experienced in my 22 years of being an Overeaters Anonymous. So sexuality is the recognition of or emphasis upon sexual matters. And emphasis means importance attached to anything. Intimacy is a close, familiar, and usually affectionate or loving personal relationship with another person or group. So I am more intimate with you guys in Overeaters Anonymous than anywhere else. And a relationship is an emotional or other connection between people. Synonyms are alliance, affinity, and natural. And affinity is a natural liking or attraction to a person, thing, or idea. So I have this relationship with you guys. My story, my mother told me at a young age, and she said this, and this is probably the core of my addiction and the change in my recovery. She said what I remember her saying, and I don't know if she's probably joking or whatever, but as a 5 or 6 or 7 year old, I took it, she said, "You have the face that only a mother could love." At the age of 8, I was sent to live with my grandmother. So that's when the abandonment issues kicked in, and I think that's when my overeating kicked in. And over the course of four or five decades, I came into the program at the age of 47 at over 400 pounds. So if you look at me, you know that I'm doing something right. I've got over 22 years in this program of recovery, and it's been over 22 years since I weighed 400 pounds. It's been over almost 22 years since I weighed over 300 pounds. And I'm moving towards it, that healthy body weight that which I know for me today. So my grandmother was senile, was from Eastern Europe, spoke Yiddish and broken English, and I lived with her, and nobody knew that she was senile. I didn't know. We didn't have that word yet. We didn't have Alzheimer's then. But a few years ago, two of my older cousins said they felt sorry for me because they knew my grandmother was a mean old lady, or that's what they thought she was. And I lived there, and she told my cousins that I would steal from her, and when my grandmother passed away, they found some of my toys that were missing in her belongings. You know, it was the other way around. So that's where the overeating kicked in. And my parents were older when they got married, so I set out to get married young because I thought maybe I'd be a better parent than they were. They were absentee parents. They were working people. And I fell in love with my wife's father the minute I met him because he was everything my dad wasn't. And so then she and I got married, and I remember my cousin, he's still alive, he's 12 years older than I am. He said, "Hank, there's still time to change your mind. If anybody is old enough to have seen the movie with Richard Benjamin and Ally McGraw called Goodbye Columbus, that was my wedding. You know, and how could I say no that night?" And I knew it was, and I said, "That's okay. If it doesn't work out, I can always get a divorce." I mean, and I've since met a lot of single people who have thought and said the same thing, whether they said it the day of the wedding or when they woke up on the first day of the honeymoon, they said, "What the fuck did I just do?" You know? And I wouldn't have used that word unless some of my younger predecessors hadn't used it. Anyway, I feel. So, we were trying to have a baby. And she had one pregnancy, and then it was a miscarriage, and then we were going to be tested for fertility. And this is, I'm becoming really intimate with you guys, because these are my deepest, darkest secrets. And I thought, that's fine. If she can't get pregnant, no one will blame me for divorcing a woman who can't have a child. That's how crazy I was a long, 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 long time ago. Turns out I was the one with fertility problem, or the infertility problem. And she said, "That's okay, we can adopt." Well, I was stunned and shocked. I said, "Fine, whatever. I didn't want to be married. Now I'm adopting." You know? Jesus, this is tough stuff. So I stayed in the marriage, and we adopted 2 children, and I love them dearly. But and this was before program, they were a constant in-my-face reminder of my infertility and my unhappiness and hiding out. And I realized the reason I stayed in that marriage, and it didn't come out for me until after I was in recovery for a long time and doing step work, was that if I had gone out and gotten divorced at 30 and met somebody who was 28, you know, or whatever, and she wanted to have a family, I would have to divulge my deepest, darkest secret. And it didn't even become apparent to me until I did the fourth and fifth step with my sponsor. And I remember I used to complain to him. I said, "I really want to get into," when I was separated from him, I want to be in an intimate relationship. And his response was, and you heard me talk about my sponsor last night if you were here, you know, some of his platitudes. And he said, "Hank, before you can get into an intimate relationship with a woman, another human being, you have to get into an intimate relationship with your higher power, because right now the only intimate relationship you have is with food. Food was my lover. It didn't talk back. It was there when I wanted it. I could pay for it. You know, it did, you know, if I paid for a prostitute, she talked to me. You know, food was the only thing that just let me do all the talking or all the moving of the mouth, you know. And so I came into the program and I worked the steps. And now for me, an intimate relationship is having an honest conversation. This for me is intimacy. This is letting you guys know what I'm all about. And it's scary, you know. I'm the perfect age for a topic on sexuality, intimacy, and relationships, and I'll let you guys figure out what the perfect age is. I'm grateful to be here. I don't think I have anything more to say about that, and I think we can have more time for questions. I learned a long time ago it's not necessary to take up all the time. So if this is your forum, you ask us the questions and we'll be happy to answer them. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Hank. Thank you, panelists. That was amazing. It's now time for questions. Oh, okay. Oh, no. I just can't read it. Okay. Okay. To the speaker on the right, sometimes the last column in my part is that I continue to put myself in abusive situations. Do you find that?
Great question. First of all, obviously everyone has their own individual experience, so it sounds like you're asking me my own personal experience. When it comes to sexual assault, no. I didn't put myself in situations to be raped. I did things that normal folks like to do, like go out dancing with their friends, or go get drinks after you finish an exam in college, or go hang out with people that you know and trust. And those are the situations in which I've been victimized and sexually abused. But for myself, absolutely not. That wasn't something I chose. What I always say to myself is, if I had known when I left the house that night that that was going to happen, would I have gone? Yes, no. That wasn't something I was seeking out for myself. I think in some other situations, I think that's something also I want to say, that professional help is really important when it comes to addressing these issues, that it's not something that in my experience a sponsor or a fellow is qualified to offer detailed feedback on. I get feedback on the steps, the principles of the 12 steps from my sponsor and from you guys, and I work with a qualified professional who has expertise in sexual victimization issues to help me with the deeper healing. It's really important to keep those separate for me. Thanks.
Thank you.
As a newbie in OA, less than 6 months, I was told, advised, to give myself 1 year in program before getting in an intimate relationship. Do you have any thoughts on that subject? Anybody want to volunteer?
It seems really hard to think, oh my gosh, 1 year and no dating. But if you really take that time and honor yourself, that I went out a year and a half. Twice I did it in the program because I'd been in 24 years when I was 16, and I binged because of relationships. So if you really want to learn how to love yourself and stay true to working the program, getting to know who you are, being with friends, it'll fly by. And then when you start dating, you're going to get to show up and be this person that is amazing. And it's not that you're not amazing now, but you're a baby and you're learning. And you're going to get to show up as a grown-up woman in a year. And I just hope you take the advice. You've got a very smart sponsor.
Anyone else want to comment on that?
Well, it's just reaffirming what I said a moment ago, developing that intimate relationship with your higher power, because I'll speak collectively, or I have a tendency to place the other person, make the other person my higher power. So I'm at that place now where I am more comfortable with myself. It's taken decades to get here. So there's hope for all of you young folks. Just to echo what Joe said, yeah, just do it. Your sponsor is very smart.
Okay, next question. If your partner says they love you and is okay with your body, how do I not hate myself / give into pleasurable sex? If your partner says they love you and is okay with your body, how do I not hate myself / give in to pleasurable sex?
I think that if that you don't have to reject what somebody asks you to do or what somebody tells you. If somebody tells you I love you and you want to give in and you want to have sex or whatever you want to do, then why hold back? I don't think that you shouldn't hate yourself for going through it or decide that it is if it's right for you and you feel that the connection is there with the other person, and then why not? Just go ahead and do what you think is right for you, as long as whatever you decide to do doesn't trigger you to overeat or to get compulsive, you know, in any kind of way. I think it's your decision, and no, you shouldn't feel bad about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just want to really quickly add, for me, I would suggest some writing on that. I think that as a compulsive overeater, it can be really difficult for me to feel pleasure in my body. I have a lot of guilt and shame that get triggered when I do things that just feel good for me, including eating foods that taste good and are healthy, like literally having guilt about that. So I'd encourage some writing about what it is about feeling pleasure that feels like it's not okay. Like, where's the guilt coming from? What's the old stuff? What's the mommy, daddy stuff getting triggered? Like, where's this coming from? Where are those beliefs coming from? And doing a 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th on it might be useful with the sponsor.
The other thing, just really quickly, is that if you can appreciate that your body works, that you're able to walk, that you're able to see, that you're able to talk, that your body goes to the bathroom, that just those things that there are a lot of people don't have. And then if you are able to just ask your higher power to help you when you're having sex, to let go of your thoughts and be present with the person that you're there with. Just ask your higher power to help you, and your brain will change. It really will.
I'd like to say something about that question also. After I got into program and after I divorced, and the only place I usually went was Overeaters Anonymous, so a lot of my relationships were with women in OA, and they had their body image, and this is about body image too, and they had their issues, so they weren't saying, they weren't complaining about how the ravages of my body, having 200 pounds lost it with the sagging skin. And it wasn't until maybe 4 or 5 years ago I got into a relationship with a woman, and she said something. She said, "Hank, you're a wonderful, sweet man," and she was beating herself up for being so visual, but she said, "Your body, it just is a turnoff." And it took a lot of courage. When I told that to people, they said, "How could she say that? Couldn't she get past that?" And she beat herself up for it. And I went home and I took a real hard look at myself in the mirror from the back, because at 400 pounds, I only look from here up. That's, you know, and it was okay. And the other woman didn't say anything. And I saw what she was talking about, and I did something about it. I went, and I've been blessed. I'm a veteran, and I was 12-stepping a guy at the gym because I was working out, and he worked at the VA, and he told me that the VA has a plastic surgery clinic. I've had 7 plastic surgeries to get rid of the sagging skin and the hanging skin, and I work out at the gym a lot. And last year I met that woman again, and she couldn't get over how great I look. So what do I know?
How do you feel sexy and attractive without having the body you want and without looking to your partner for validation?
When I was overweight, I rubbed my tummy and I was like, "I'm so voluptuous." I just said it. You know, it's fake it till you make it, using those steps, visualizing, okay, what I want to look like, okay, I don't look like that now, but really buying pieces of clothing that you feel good in. Even if it's not the size you want today, the great thing about weight is that it comes off. So if you can just accept today and say what you're grateful for, gratitude list is a big deal. Buy some things that make you feel better. Don't go, oh, I'm going to wait until I'm this size. And do things that you like. Go and get a facial. Go get your nails done. Take care of yourself. And it will. It'll be like a caterpillar and a butterfly.
This next question is for Christine. When did you realize that smothering a partner would not prevent them from leaving and hurting you? Describe your state of mind, please.
My state of mind. Yeah, I realized smothering didn't work when it didn't work. That was when I realized it, right? It was when holding on really tightly didn't work. No, my turning point for that was when it became more painful to keep showing up. Okay. The pain of showing up in a relationship with someone who wasn't capable of giving me what I wanted, who didn't actually want to be in a relationship with me, when that pain was greater than the pain of the abandonment, of letting go, of being alone, that was the tipping point, right? Just like with the food, when the discomfort and pain of abstinence actually was more appealing than the pain that food was causing me, that was when I was willing to put the food down with God's help. So a mental state. Yeah, so it was as a result of working this program, being honest with the sponsor about my behavior, sharing in meetings about what was going on, sharing with fellows. I wanted to say, too, the sexy question, surround yourself with people who think you're fabulous and sexy. Like, there's the fellows come in really handy. I walk into a meeting and, like, the oohs and the ahs from your friends. I mean, it feels great. Go to meetings. Like, we love each other. Compliment each other. Tell each other how beautiful we are. Looking out at all of you, you're gorgeous. And then dye your hair purple if you really feel like shit, because that really helped me.
Another one for Christine. How do you learn to trust again after sexual assault?
Slowly. Slowly. You learn to trust trustworthy people. Professional help. It started, you guys, with trusting my own body. What happens after a sexual assault is I no longer felt safe in my own body. I no longer trusted myself. Forget the rest of you. I didn't trust God. I didn't trust me. So I needed to do some healing around my own relationship with myself, trusting my gut, listening to myself, just like I did when I got abstinent. You know that time when you guys have, like, I sat down to my first abstinent meal and I just intuitively know what to eat? It was the same thing with my body, of intuitively knowing sort of what feels safe for me, what feels comfortable. And then I would say learning to set boundaries, right? Like, I learned to trust by setting boundaries with people and seeing how they responded, if they were respectful of me and of my boundaries. But slowly, one day at a time, easy does it.
This next one is so good. Are you ready? How do you deal with after-sex munchies? Being hungry after a good workout, and you've eaten all your meals, and it might be like 3 a.m. Thank you.
Do you want to answer that one, honey? I think you might
want to. So. Nibble on your partner.
I used to take Weight Watchers cream cheese off of a Weight Watchers diet when I was dieting and put it on my partner. It's not a good idea. You know, you can always have fresh fruit. You can always, you know, whatever. Or go to sleep, you know. Going to sleep after a good workout with some water, good idea. And just, you know, maybe move over on the other side of the bed. Or cuddle up. Being held is really nice. And that can sometimes take that away. And again, ask your higher power for help.
Can I take this home with me? This question? Okay. Okay, tips for maintaining abstinence and not falling apart when someone breaks up with you.
Go back to the basics, tell your sponsor what happened, share it in a meeting, and keep coming back.
I think that, what was the question again?
Oh, okay. tips for maintaining abstinence and not falling apart when someone breaks up with you.
I haven't been in a relationship, but I dated people at different times. And when it's the end, it's the end. You have to know that it's, you know, there's a time frame for people or situations. But I do know that it's not going to solve anything if I break my abstinence or if I lose control. I mean, if I stop doing the things that I do when the person is there and when the person is not, it's going to affect me, not the other person, because the other person leaves. So I just remain abstinent, and I do my reading, and I do my writing, and I call my sponsor, and I realize that it was what it was, and I have to move on.
Can I piggyback on that, just because I went through two breakups in the past, like, 6 months? What helped me tremendously was actually falling apart. The question said, how do you not fall apart? For me, it was really important to be honest about my feelings, to just acknowledge how hard it was to let go, and asking for help, coming to meetings, like everything that the panelists already said, and asking God to help fill up that hole, and letting myself have my feelings. It's a natural process, the grieving process. Let's have it.
And just a word of caution from my experience, if you get into a relationship with somebody in program that you've met at a meeting, a breakup can be difficult. I mean, it was like dividing the meetings, you know, because it was there. So just be careful of that, or be aware of it, that that's a possibility, and you have to find different meetings. Or, okay, I'll go on the second and fourth Friday of the month, and you go on the first and the third, and then, you know, Hershey was out of town, so then I could go the other time. It's just have to be careful.
Thanks. And finally, how does your romantic or intimate partner relate to you and our disease?
Support. In fact, a relationship I had when I told him, and I waited. I didn't, you know, today I don't have to burst everything out right away. I can wait until I can trust the person. But he was so supportive. He's like, anything I can do to help, anything I can do, what can I do? And I said, honey, you know, this you can't do. I go to meetings, and I really appreciate it, but I have to go to OA. So it's wonderful to be able to have that. But really, it's here. It's you guys. And it's my higher power. I can't depend on him. But it was great support. It was no big deal at all.
Quickly say a partner is a big reason of why I came into these rooms, because it was literally so painful for my partner to witness what I was doing with the food and the way it affected her, like the quantity of oil she put in the pan, that I would have like a nervous breakdown when, you know, I can't eat that. And like that actually was part of what brought me to my knees, was her loving concern for me and what was going on. So I think that can also be an important part of the recovery process, as a partner being a sounding board, like, I've been to a meeting in a couple days, right? That kind of piece of just having someone, another human being we're close to, who knows our shit and loves us. Anyway.
Okay, it's now time to close the meeting. Let's thank Christine, Norman, Joe, and Hank. Thank you guys very much. There will be another event in this room directly following this one, so please take your conversations out into the hallway as quickly as possible. Thank you. Please stand and join me in the third step prayer. Okay. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. You work it.
Yay!
Thanks for asking me to do this.
Really good. But that was